Gag, who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It's just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, delighted to welcome along Scottish football broadcasting legend, Jim Spence. Jim, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, guys. Normally, that introduction is actually a leg end as opposed to legend, but very kind of you. Anyhow, listen, good to be here. I'm delighted to see the rise, the ongoing rise of the podcast with football fans, because it gives you guys a chance, I think, to, you know, get away from the narrow strictures of the mainstream media and how they want to punt stories. So, good to be on.
Okay, a lot to talk about. We will focus primarily on Tuesday night's victory over Dundee United and possibly bypass the 2-0 defeat to Kilmarnock the previous Saturday. Jay, we talked about it in the previous podcast, how big these two games were. We got off to a terrible start against Kelly, but what a lift the 3 points against Dundee United were.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you'll be able to fill us in a wee bit more about Tuesday night. I didn't make it myself. Saturday I was unfortunately at the game and it was just absolutely dire. You know, Martin McGee described it as the worst performance we've had since he's been here. I would say that it's definitely up there. There have been more than one. Dingwall, for example, was absolutely terrible. But Saturday was just so poor. There was no movement, no confidence, and no creativity. Just everything that seemed to go wrong and a team performance went wrong on Saturday, and we didn't really have any excuses by the end of the game. Whereas Tuesday, by all accounts, we looked better, we looked hungrier, a bit more confidence in the side. So obviously getting the result was vital. I think that, you know, when you consider the run we've been on the last few weeks, to get the 3 points against the team, you know, at the bottom of the league, it's not, you know, a great scalp by any means, but it kind of gives us a little bit more breathing space. It allows us to end the run we've been on, hopefully take a bit of confidence going into the next game. But I just don't think we can get too carried away yet. You know, Dundee United, I mean, me and Buster were talking before we started, and Dundee United have been incredibly poor this season. It's been a while since I can remember a side being almost dead certs for relegation so early on in the season. So, you know, it's by no means a fantastic result, but in terms of our own run that we were on, in terms of our own confidence and how we can move on from it, it's a vital 3 points.
Jim, I hope you're not close to any sharp objects after hearing...
Yeah, you have no idea how cruel that was to listen to. Listen, actually, firstly, congratulations, because, I mean, you know, I'm sitting looking at the league table here. You've played the 26, one more than us. I mean, we're dead and buried. United are dead and buried. And you guys are sitting there on 29. So you're now in that scrap, you know, where you're near neighbours, Aki's point ahead of Thistle and Kilmarnock. I would be astonished, I have to say, if Motherwell end up in the playoff place. I think you're too good a side. And I think McGee, you know, I'll be interested to hear, you know, what you guys think of McGee's second time round. I dealt with him a lot when he had that, you know, hellish spell at Aberdeen. But, I mean, I still tend to think that the kind of enthusiasm that he shows will rub off on the side, you know. And I would be astonished if Motherwell ended up in that playoff place. I'm pretty sure that you guys will be secure in the Premiership for next season.
Buster, that's an interesting point. Mark McGee's summary of the game said that the Motherwell performance would have got football stopped. I personally thought it was our best performance, certainly, of 2016. And we played it right. United have got a lot of dangerous attacking players. There was a spell at the start of the second half where they certainly looked very likely to get the equaliser, and who knows what would have happened following that. The significance of the result, as we say, is huge. And I think the performance as well will come as a huge boost going into a run of games that will shape whether we are drawn back into this dogfight at the bottom of the table, or we can perhaps set our sights to the top six.
Well, I don't think we're far away from either side of the table, to be honest with you. You know, I think it's something like 2 points above Kilmarnock, 4 points behind Ross County in fourth. So I've said it before and I'll say it again, MD in this league can beat MD at any given point. So it depends really on, you know, who gets a run going together. You know, if we can pick up a couple of points, you know, I've got a couple of, as you said, a couple of games which we should be able to maybe pick up, you know, 4, 5, 6 points, something like that. If we can pick up those kind of points, you know, I can see it's obviously been pretty safe, but whether or not, you know, we'll end up in the top six, I don't know. But I think, you know, after last season, the goal was to finish at least 10th. So, you know, anything 10th and above, and I'd be happy with that. You know, Jim's mentioned, you know, he'd be interesting to hear our thoughts on McGee. McGee changed it drastically for the game on Tuesday. And again, you know, as people were questioning whether it was going to be a back four, a back three, back five, what we're going to do. And he said, you know, he picked that formation out of one of his dreams. So it's, you know, I kind of like McGee. He's you know, as Jim says, he's enthusiastic. He's confident in what he does. You know, some people are just calling him, you know, outright gobby, basically, at times. And, you know, I can see that as well. But he's got belief in himself, and he's not afraid to open his mouth and say things. So
I think that sums him up. I think he's one of these guys that he has absolute self-belief. He's absolutely good. I mean, he's a highly intelligent guy. And that's the first thing. I mean, he's probably not your usual kind of football player. You kind of sense it if McGee hadn't been a football player or a manager, had he been an English teacher or a vet or something. He's a smart cookie, you know. He's divisive because there's a lot of people, you know, I always think there's a streak of authoritarianism runs right through us in Scotland. We sometimes don't like too much people who have got a bit to say and can say it pretty articulately and intelligently, but you know, I mean, looking at the players that you've got in the side, I think there's a fair bit of talent and a bit of creativity in the side. Now, I don't see you guys obviously as often as you see them, but you know, I'm intrigued as well as to how we Gomez, or we Jimmy Gomez, you know, as United fans call them, will do, because he's a smashing wee midfield player, you know, and I sense that McGee will get the best out of this side. But I would be astonished, as I said earlier on, if you end up in trouble, and it might well be that you're up towards that top half of the table as opposed to the bottom, because you're right, there's a real tightness. You could almost throw a blanket over some of these sides.
Was it surprising to you that the United chairman chose the defeat to Motherwell to express his frustration about how things have been going, given that he stressed that there was mistakes made over the 18 months? It feels almost offensive that he chose losing 3-0 to Motherwell to come out and talk.
Well, you should take it as a great compliment. No, I mean, funnily enough, I had a long chat with him this morning. I mean, that's, you know, there is no rhyme or reason to Stephen Thompson's behaviour, and I'm sure he, you know, I'm sure he wouldn't take offence at me saying that. He just, you know, he owns the club along with his sister, and therefore he, you know, he pretty much says and does what he feels is right. And there's no apparent rhyme or reason as to why or when or where he says it. I think what happened with the Motherwell defeat was it was a culmination, and probably it was probably an expectation that, you know, with the two sides being pretty much, you know, in similar positions, albeit, you know, I thought long before the game that we, you know, United were dead and buried anyhow. But it's probably an expectation that, you know, we might match Motherwell over the course of 90 minutes, as opposed to, let's say, Hearts or Aberdeen or Celtic, something like that, or even our near neighbours Dundee. So maybe that was a frustration, but I suspect that the real frustration was simply that you know, the 3-0 defeat was probably the final confirmation that, you know, realistically, I know it's not arithmetically certain, but, you know, in all probability, United are dead and buried, and that defeat and the scale of that defeat and the way that United lost, I think, confirmed it. And I suspect that was the reason that he came out and had a pop. What I thought was interesting, and it's interesting again from the comments I made right at the start of this, is that he chose to do it. And I saw this more and more as a journalist before, you know, I left the BBC 6 months ago with freelance. You can see more and more the changes that are going on in journalism, that clubs no longer have to wait on guys like me or a Chick Young or a Graham Spears or somebody rattling up to the press conference to get the story out the next day. You simply bang it on your website or your Twitter account, your Facebook account or whatever, you know, and you can get the message out there directly to fans, and it's round the houses in no time at all. So, you know, I mean, the Motherwell defeat, I think, was pure and simple confirmation that United, in most people's books, and probably his as well, were doomed.
Jay, since the last time we recorded, James McFadden has put pen to paper in another short-term deal. God knows how many that is. He's, how many times he's rejoined now, but he was an integral part of the performance in Tuesday night, beg your pardon, where he really pulled the strings. A brilliant delivery for Stephen McManus's opening goal on the stroke of half time. It looked like a different James McFadden from the one that made cameo appearances against Cove Rangers and Ross County just earlier in the year. Could be a major positive for us, I believe, if we can get an on-form McFadden between now and the end of May.
Definitely. Jim mentioned McGee being quite divisive. I think we're getting to the stage where McFadden can be quite divisive in the Motherwell support. Not in terms of, you know, him as a symbol or as a legend, but just in terms of what he can offer the team these days. Whenever there's a thread on Steelman Online, for example, about Faddy, there are those who are, you know, full of joy the fact that he signed just purely because it's James McFadden. There are others who completely dismiss the idea that he might still have something to offer. So I think it's encouraging, particularly during the window there. I think we could have done with another striker or another forward player, you know, getting rid of, you know, Theo Robinson, sending David Clarkson out on loan. You know, we were kind of down to the bare bones in terms of forward players, particularly if we were going two up top. Louis Moulkes obviously been banging in goals this season, but was on a bit of a poor run there and was dropped for the team. Scott McDonald, you know, I noticed Buster had actually mentioned something about the players in Steelman Online and got a bit of debate about Scott McDonald going, about, you know, what he offers the team and how well he's been playing. And Wes Fletcher, although he's been on the bench, he doesn't seem to be, you know, that highly rated by McGee. So I think that it was a gap there during the January transfer window, as well as a central midfield player for a forward player. And, you know, we got Gomez in, didn't fill that gap up front. And if McFadden can hit, you know, some kind of form, and it wasn't that long ago when he first came back, well, you know, the second time or third time or whatever time it was, when he was, you know, fantastic. He had, you know, I think it was, you know, the last 3 or 4 months of the season, and he was top class. And that wasn't, you know, like years and years ago, that was fairly recent. So I think if we can get a fit McFadden, look after him well. You know, you need to recognise that he does have a problem with injuries. He is getting on a bit. You know, maybe leave him out at certain games and things like that. But if he can get to, you know, anywhere near the ability that he used to have, then he'll be a fantastic asset for us in this league.
I think that with McFadden, he's now basically a 100%. A luxury player, in my opinion. He says, you know, he can be a bit divisive. I'm of the opinion that he has to either play up front or in the hole. And if we're going to go two up front with McDonald and Moult, we're going to lose somebody somewhere else. And, you know, it worked against Dundee United, fair play again to McGee, you know, the staff, whoever come up with that. But I think he's a bit of a luxury player. He's not got the mobility he had probably even, as you say, 18 months ago, whenever it was he first came back.
I'd agree with that. In fact, I would suggest that although McFadden might have played really well on Tuesday, I still think that we're probably past the idea of him playing week in, week out. I think that because of his lack of mobility and things like that, I think that you kind of need to flood the midfield if you're going to play a front two. If you're going to play a front two with McFadden in there, I think you're going to have to flood the midfield a little bit to compensate. And the only way you can really do that with the front two is to play three at the back, is to lose your, you know, to lose a player from the back four in order to fill that gap in midfield. So I don't by any means think that Faddy is now going to be a regular from now until the end of the season. But he's the kind of player that can come off the bench, can change games, and if he's playing at the, you know, at a decent level and he's fit, and more importantly if he's focused. I mean, Sparrow, you mentioned there about him, you know, looking like a different player, but you know, was he holding back a little bit against, you know, the likes of Cove Rangers, etc.? Oh, I know it's only Cove Rangers, no disrespect to them, but, you know, he was gearing up for this, you know, big, well-publicised move to America that didn't come off. And now that that's out of the way, it's out of his head, maybe that's, you know, a contributory factor to the performance that was on Tuesday.
Jim, Mark McGee's often alluded to the fact that the experienced players are so vital to Motherwell, guys like Keith Lasley, Stephen Hamill. You've got at United, you've got guys like Sean Dillon and John Rankin, but do you think they, these guys perhaps aren't having as much of an influence on the squad just now, and that could be one of the reasons for a very disappointing campaign so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's intriguing hearing the voice talking about McFadden there, you know, I mean, in terms of kind of what an experienced player brings to the squad. I mean, he's almost a boy by Lasley. I mean, Lasley's heading towards his 38th birthday, isn't he? He's still, you know, I have to say, I'm a big Lasley admirer. He's one of these players that in a Scottish dimension it would always be in one of my teams, because he's got, in the parlance, he's got a terrific engine. He never halts. He makes the bone-crunching tackles. The distribution's not bad, you know. But you know, you're looking at McFadden only being 32, and we know the time he's had with injuries and stuff like that. But you're talking about a guy who's been capped 48 times and played at top level, you know, very good level in English football as well. And I know that Mark McGee was saying, I noticed that what he brings to training is important. I think sometimes, you know, it's very easy to get kind of caught up as a fan, as a journalist, and kind of only what you see at the weekend. But I think there is something important. Just as, you know, whatever we all work at, it's always good to have somebody about a journalist's workroom, or, you know, if you're a plumber or a painter or a lawyer, it's always good to have somebody about the place that's infectious, that brings humour, that is professional about their work and how they go about things. Because I think, you know, the impact of that is on a day-to-day basis, and it's also over a long period of time, because remember, they'll be training with younger players coming in the first team squad and all the rest of it. I think often there's a benefit in all that as well, having a guy like him about the place. Plus, he still has a fantastic touch. You're absolutely right that he's no longer a 90-minute player. To be honest, he hasn't been a 90-minute player for a long, long time. And I had the great good fortune to be right behind, and I mean literally behind, the Scotland goal, the France goal the night that he scored in France. You know, I was sitting there with a TV producer, I was working for telly, and we were 10 yards to the right of that goal, sitting on a wooden bench when he unleashed you know, that shot. And so kind of, I'm not quite like wee Chick Young in bowing to no one in my admiration of James McFadden, but I'm probably not that far behind him. He's a particularly good talent, and he probably is coming into, you know, that kind of framework now with the Hamels, the Lasleys, and you mentioned at United, the Rankins and the Dillons, in terms of the impact that he should have. But I mean, it's all very well talking about, you know, what I've just said. You know, it almost feels as though I'm going to contradict myself. You still actually have to be able to do it on the park. And the frequency with which he can deliver on the part now is kind of, I suppose, lessening by, you know, by the season. But he's still potentially a match winner for you, whether it be kind of, you know, playing as one or two up front and taking a goal, or more importantly these days, finding the pass that unlocks the route to goal for somebody else.
Jim, obviously this season you'll have been watching from a slightly different vantage point, given that you left the BBC and moved into freelance work. How enjoyable has that been for you, perhaps having the shackles off to a certain regard, and being able to say a bit more and express your opinions and possibly put across your passion for the game in a slightly different way as well?
Well, it has been good, and it's been different. And to be honest with you, even at this stage, I mean, it's only 6 months ago now. I was at the Beeb for over 20 odd years. You know, I'm still, and I've done bits and bobs recently for them, and may do again. But it's in a different, that's in a different capacity now. As a BBC staffer, and you know, I can't speak for, you know, the papers or any other employer, but as a BBC staffer, you're naturally constrained in certain things that you can say. That's just the nature of the job. Your job is to report. Occasionally, we were a bit kind of split personality about it, because, you know, one night you'd maybe be working as a reporter, and then the next night you'd be on Sports Sound presenting, or in the role of kind of pundit stroke journalist, in which case you were expected to put your opinions, and that can be sometimes you know, a Jekyll and Hyde type experience. Whereas when you're freelance, the biggest difference at the moment is I'm doing columns and I'm writing, you know, bits and bobs, mainly along the line of column work and speaking engagements and stuff like that. So I'm not actually covering a game as such on a Saturday, which means that I, you know, I'm not dealing with the day-to-day minutiae, torn hamstrings and, you know, and dodgy left ankles and stuff like that. I'm actually getting a chance to, you know, to look at the game, not just from a Dundee United point of view, but from a wider point of view. And bluntly, I don't really have to worry about who I offend by saying what I think, you know. I don't think I've ever been the type of journalist that deliberately set out to offend people, but you do kind of want it. You know, everybody's entitled to opinion, and you know, mine is no better than yours as fans, and yours is no better than the guy that pays his 22 quid or his 500 quid for his season book next to you, you know, at Third Park. So, you know, the game is about opinions, and we know that because very frequently players, managers, and others and coaches in the game all have different opinions anyway. So it's quite nice and quite refreshing to be able to have my say. Sometimes it's actually quite difficult to remember that you are now freelance and you can have that say. There is a wee touch of having been institutionalised at the BBC, and I mean that in the nicest possible sense.
I know the Scottish game does get downplayed, perhaps a bit too much by our own media as well, but I suppose it's telling the fact that you continue to express your opinions about Scottish football. You've not turned your back in the game after leaving your job at the BBC. The passion clearly still remains.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think if you're a football fan, you're a football fan. I think that's the first thing. I mean, if I'm no longer at Tannadice for some reason on a Saturday or at Dens Park, and I mean that may change because I've kind of, you know, turned down quite a few offers because I did after a fair amount of time at the kind of the chalk face everyone every day for 20 odd years. I did actually want a wee bit of time to do something different. So that might change into the kind of, you know, not so much the rest of this season, but next season. But for the moment, I can go and do things like watch junior football, for instance, which has always been quite a, you know, an enjoyable passion of mine as well. But mainly, it's a senior game you go to see. So first and foremost, I'm a football fan, and you know, I think there is a tendency sometimes in our media to knock our game, but I don't think it's a deliberate thing. I think that's us as Scots. I think we're either kind of glass half full or glass half empty merchants. You know, we kind of quite make our mind up what we are. And the truth of the matter is, the Scottish game is what it is. And you know, Motherwell, you guys are playing to crowds of what, give or take 4,500, 5,000. Dundee United play to kind of crowds of 6,500. There's no magic bullet out there that's going to kind of, you know, make another 5,000 people turn out to Fir Park or another 5,000 turn out to Tannadice. You know, we are what we are. We've got what we've got. We've had some incredible times in the past in European football, for instance. Those are actually in the modern world unlikely to change. So essentially what we, you know, what guys like myself as a Dundee United fan, you guys as well fans, followers, it's about community. It's about town. It's about city. It's about, you know, how you're brought up. The tails on your granddad's knee, your dad's knee, with your mates in the boozer, boys that you went to school with. It's essentially a community thing, you know, and you know, I think that feeds through. That's where the passion comes from, because it's not just about the football. I mean, let's be blunt, if it was only about success, Motherwell and you know, other than for a small period in Dundee United's history, there wouldn't be a great many people going to Fir Park or going to Tannadice Park, because our success in the greater scheme of things against the behemoths of Celtic and Rangers have been pretty sparse, you know. And that's the same for most Scottish clubs.
There's been a lot of talk this week regarding the changes up to the League Cup, and particularly the fact that the League Cup final will now be played in November. To have been played in November after a long, long time have been played in March. Buster, we've talked already about the need for change in the League Cup particularly. Noticing as well the chat about the ditching of replays and the overhaul of the FA Cup during the week down south. So changes, for what I see as the good of the game, will have one of the cups out the way by the end of the year. Going in our recent cup forum, we'll be out by possibly about July. But it is interesting to see the authorities appear to be listening to a certain degree, and they're at least trying to change things up and move away from the tried and tested format that I think we all agree has got a bit stale.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be good to have the final back before Christmas again. It's it seemed to get a bit strange where the, you know, all the rounds were played until about November, and then there was the odd semi in January, and then obviously, you know, the final was played later in the year, even later in the season, even then. You know, I also believe there's, you know, the sort of league sections coming in as well. I don't know if that's starting next season, you know, whenever that is, but it's, you know, it's interesting to see them at least try and change it up a wee bit. I don't know if it's worth talking again about whether or not it's worth changing the leagues up, but, you know, it's the league reconstruction is maybe something I'd like to see as well, but, you know, we can start with the cups and see where it takes us, I suppose.
I think, guys, that you know, one of the important things that's going on, we've now, I mean, as you guys are well aware, we now have kind of two separate groups, reporters, you know, outside of kind of individual clubs, we've got two separate groups of fans representatives, you know, the Supporters Direct and the New Scottish Football Fans set up under Paul Goodwin. So I think it would be kind of be remiss if we didn't think that the authorities weren't paying close attention to the fact that there's a grassroots movement emerging, and a lot of people have been very unhappy about a lot of things, you know, such as league setup, such as the way we organise cups and all the rest of it. So, I you know, I'm a great believer that the authority will do as little as it can get away with until such times as it comes under pressure. So that they're reacting, I think, to a great many things. Now, I mean, that's fine. That's a good thing. I mean, you know, it's much better that the people in charge of the game actually listen and say, well, you know what, that's not a bad idea. Let's go with that. That sounds good. And I think that it's a good idea we've got the short, sharp focus of the season, starting with the final going to be played in November. That's a much better idea than the way it's been. We're almost kind of drifting away into the ether. And sometimes, unless your two teams are in the final, you actually forgot that the competition hadn't actually been won at some stage, you know. And so I think that's a good thing. I think the League Cup sections are a good thing. And I'm the same, you know, you're making a point a minute ago there about changes to league. I'm done with a 12-club system. I think, you know, I'd prefer a bigger league, whether it's 48, 16 would be my ideal, but I think we're leaving too many good sides stranded in the Championship, and we're not bringing football to great old Scottish football towns like Airdrie and Greenock and places like that, you know, that have been kind of left adrift for years and years, so I'd like a bigger league set up as well.
Well, I think that's... Unfortunately, we brought a League Cup campaign to Greenock earlier on in the season. Quite happily skipped that.
Sore point, sorry.
On you go, Buster, sorry.
No, I was just going to say about the, you know, the league reconstruction thing. I think, you know, as Jim says, it's 14 would be great. 16, as you say, would probably be ideal. But, you know, I don't think it'll ever happen for... As we well know, you know, TV money, the companies want to see, you know, Rangers and Celtic as many times as possible. That's where they make their money. And even, I think, you know, the sort of, the voting system they've got, the sort of, is it one in 11 or two in 11?
They're going to push it through, you're right.
Yeah, I think the last time we even had a chance, you know, it was sort of vetoed by Aberdeen, who, although that's where they now thought they'd be the second best team in the country for the next couple of years. You know, we seem to edge them on a couple of occasions there, but you know, they're in that place now. And I think it was them that sort of vetoed the last time they tried to have some sort of vote about the voting structure. So I don't think, you know, we're going to see anything like that soon, to be honest with you.
I think what frustrates me about the whenever the subject of league reconstruction comes up, I mean, you know, Jim mentioned there the likes of Airdrie, the likes of Morton, and you always get folk who are anti-league reconstruction will look at teams like that and say, well, you know, they're a good distance away in terms of quality, in terms of facilities, etc. You know, they won't offer anything to the league. But it's almost like a chicken and the egg kind of situation where once they've been in the league and they get the rewards of, you know, greater attendances, prize money, etc., and then they can invest that in their team, then they will start to grow as well. For me, it's a no-brainer. I think the 16-team league is by far the best option. And interestingly, I'd always kind of advocate, like years ago when we used to have a kind of debate about this, be in forums and in pubs, etc., the idea of returning to the old kind of League Cup group system was something I'd kind of mentioned in the past as an answer to folk who said that a 16-team league, you won't get enough games. You know, if you have the league, if you're guaranteed those League Cup group games at the start of the season, and then you're, you know, your 16-team league playing each other twice, then I think there is enough games there to tide you over the entire season. And as we know from experience, if there is the odd weekend where there isn't games on, then, you know, teams like Celtic and Rangers will fly to America and play a friendly somewhere. It's not an issue. I think that the league reconstruction hopefully will be looked at some point in the future. I kind of agree with Buster. I don't think it'll happen because the TV companies have all the power. You know, you just have to look and not just in this country, you know, you just have to look at Tuesday night when none of us were allowed to watch the Edinburgh Derby on TV because the Champions League was on at the same time, even though I personally can't remember the last time I watched a Champions League match. So,
unless you're watching the guy with Periscope, which I was.
Well, yeah, there is that. but yeah, I think the TV companies, until the TV companies, you know, stop their fascination with Rangers and Celtic, then you can't see it.
I think another factor you've got to consider there as well is you look at Tuesday night, we're having to go to Dundee for a rearranged fixture. 2 weeks ago, we're at Firhill for a rearranged fixture. Both days the weather was very poor. When we were leaving for Dundee on Tuesday night, Marty actually phoned through to United to see if the game was definitely going to be on because we thought it was going to be a wasted trip. The weather was horrendous. So you perhaps eradicate the need for these silly midweek fixtures where there's going to be a poor travelling support. A lot of the home fans might not be able to make it as well from work, etc. So just make it a bit more easy for the fans. Consider the fans a bit more and I think you'll inevitably see your attendances rise as a result.
I actually wonder, you know, I'm not putting this forward because if I'm being honest, I haven't quite made my mind up on this, but I have made my mind up in the respect of summer football. I'm a fan of that. And I know people say, when would you play it and how would you get the games in and all the rest of it? But somebody once made a suggestion, which I thought was certainly, you know, had some merit in it. And that was that given that many players profess that they actually dislike training intensely, I think there could well be a couple of months where you actually play Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday through the summer months. And you might still attract, I mean, you know, huge numbers of people these days are season book holders as opposed to when, you know, somebody like me started watching football. Most of us kind of turned up, paid our money at Tannadice, Dens Park, Fir Park, wherever. And the guys that were season book holders sat in the stand with a tartan blanket over them. You know what I mean? Nowadays, huge numbers of people are season book holders. And I wonder if there's some merit in exploring that notion of, you know, certainly for a couple of months of the game, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, because at least you'd be playing through the summer months when it was light until kind of 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. You know, there might be something in that. I'm not sure about the reconstruction thing. I'd like to see it happen. I think I'm probably just about in your camp on this. I suspect that, you know, the authorities are not overly keen on it, but I think at the same time they sense that there's a tiredness with the current format, and nobody's telling me, well, look, we know about Rangers and Hibs, we've seen that with, you know, the way these two are kind of battling out for the league, but nobody's going to tell me that a Morton or a Falkirk or a St Mirren or a Raith Rovers would not bring something to the top league. You know, they're probably certainly as good at the moment as Dundee United or Kilmarnock. You know, so, you know, I think we could get away with it. I mean, an 18 club league is probably pushing it far too far. A 16, I think we could probably just get away with, you know.
I suppose the increase in attendances, full houses at both Rugby Park and, well, I think it was near a full house at Rugby Park, a full house at Easter Road, certainly for the Edinburgh Derby. That brought on a different dimension, as Jay mentioned, with the Champions League games being broadcast for some reason. And this is almost inexplicable that you're not able to show other football because the Champions League is only shown in town. Then Jim touched upon it, the Periscope and people going to the game and basically broadcasting it for those that couldn't be there. I'm not sure if it's something that I would fancy sitting with my mobile phone and filming a game that I've paid money to attend, but... Certainly, Jim, people picked up on this and there was more people watching in Periscope the Rangers-Kilmarnock game that were actually inside the Edinburgh Derby, I believe.
Well, no, it certainly went down very, very well. I mean, I saw bits and bobs of the Hibs Hearts game on Periscope, and you know, the quality. I mean, YouTube is arguably an old format now, you know, and heading out of date. But what it kind of, you know, what I said to a mate of mine, in fact, I think I tweeted this last night. You know, there's a YouTube generation that have grown up. That, I mean, you know, in the media, we get our knickers in a knot about quality. quality and production values and all this sort of stuff. But see, if you're a fan, sometimes you just want to be able to see the game. And although you'd rather have an HD quality and 14 cameras around the stadium and all the rest of it, that was the only way a lot of people could see that game the other night. And it was fascinating. It was also a fascinating experiment. I'm the same as you. Haven't been a fan of using Periscope until the BBC decided it was probably pushing the boat too far. I used it for various bits and bobs at matches, and it's a great tool, you know. But I think the key thing is, you know, what you saw the other night was the Scottish game. There is still a great hunger for it. I mean, you know, I'm sadly long enough in the tooth to recall, I think it was St Mirren and Motherwell, you know, drawing, and I think it was the League Cup or Scottish Cup, and then going to replay at Fir Park in midweek, and something like 27,000-28,000 being at the game. Now, you know, there's two reasons it wouldn't happen now, because Fir Park kind of hold that anymore. But, you know, I'm not sure there's that kind of appetite for football anymore. But there's still a great appetite for football. There's almost 14,000 at Rugby Park, and just under 20,000 at Easter Road proved. I mean, you get the game right, you get the circumstances right, there's still a huge appetite for Scottish football.
Do you think that there is some scope for making games almost the only way you can see them is attending live, and that would maybe whet those appetites to get along?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting you say it, because, you know, at the risk of sounding negative about the game, and I'm not, you know, in the darker moments sometimes I think the game's dying on its backside, you know. Sometimes you look around, you see some of the crowds, and then things happen like midweek and you see big crowds and you think, no, actually there's life in the old dog. Yeah. I actually have wondered whether there is room for saying, you know, the TV deals we've got are not that fantastic. Maybe there is room here for simply, you know, showing one game or occasionally no games and having a completely TV-free Saturday or something like that. I don't know. There is something special, I think, about a Saturday when all the teams are playing, because half the fun, if you're a Motherwell fan, I suspect, is, you know, sitting there, you know, tuning into whatever radio or Twitter or whatever to discover that Hamilton Accies are getting stuffed. Or you're a Dundee United fan seeing that's happening to your neighbours across the road. That sense of community, that sense of, you know, that whole thing about tribalism and all the rest of it in football. And there might well be something in that notion of occasional TV-free zone, so that the only way you can see the football is actually turn up and you pay your money and you go through the turnstile. But it'll not happen.
Well, I think the one issue, I think, there is, you know, the paying of the money part. I mean, we've spoken in the podcast, and no doubt it gets, you know, spoke all over. The fact that things have... the likes of the Glasgow Warriors, the Brayhead Clan, etc., these kind of new sports that will still kind of satisfy that interest in sport and the kind of the competition and the tribalism that goes with it, but does so in a far more kind of friendly environment, a far more enjoyable experience, far better priced. And, you know, as far as your suggestion of, you know, it might, you know, encourage people to go to games if the only way of seeing the game is to go along, but it still needs to be priced properly. There's nobody who's going to decide, right, the game's not on the TV today, so yeah, I'm going to go and pay £26 to see it. They might just decide, oh well, I'll watch the highlights, or I'll, you know, listen to the radio, or, you know what, I'm not, it's not worth that money at all, and I'm going to go and watch Brayhead Clan instead. I think, you know, the TV blackout thing could certainly work. I don't watch enough football on TV to really justify a TV deal in Scotland. You know, I go to most of the games, there's no issues for me there, but I think for, you know, someone who's on the edge who would need to be, you know, who would respond to a TV blackout by going to the game, you would still need to encourage them to actually attend, yeah, the match day experience. And
well, you know, one of the things here is that I think, and, you know, I mean, I've got the BBC hat off now, so it's not extent I can say this, but I mean, at least in the BBC, I know that the focus of most people is telly, but I know we put a hell of a lot of resources into midweek sports sound, and it actually does take a lot of money to do radio. That's why none of the independents do it, you know, a proper midweek programme, if you want, you know, because, you know, the money isn't there, and a covering a Saturday programme and all the rest of it. But in terms of telly, if you actually ask yourself what Sky and BT put in, other than covering a match day, there's nothing. There's not a rolling, you know, sports channel that really covers Scotland in any great depth in either of these two. We certainly don't do it because we don't have a platform to do it in the BBC, other than the, you know, the reporting Scotland kind of format. So you sometimes actually wonder what television brings to Scottish football. certainly as opposed to the likes of radio. But, you know, money drives the game. There's no doubt about that. But I'm kind of in your camp. I mean, some of the prices I've seen for walk-up, prices for football, 24 and 26 quid, I just think they're ludicrous. They're absolutely ludicrous. I mean, I know there's, you know, this is a subjective definition. How much is it? I found myself thinking this other night, what is a fair price for top flight football? To be honest, I think 15 quid's about as much as I would want to pay.
Exactly.
And I was pretty well paid, you know. I think 15 quid's about, give or take, enough for anybody, you know.
Absolutely. You would think with forward-thinking people involved in the Scottish game just now, guys, Alan Burrows and Budget Hearts, people that seem to be very well engaged with football supporters and seem to know what football fans want, that this hasn't been pushed a bit harder.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mention Alan Burrows there, because I've got to say that, I mean, look, I know, you know, kind of now in a sense being on the outside, kind of looking in, I know the esteem within which the Scottish mainstream media is held by fans, you know. And you know, and when you deal with clubs, I mean, bluntly as a journalist, most clubs you actually go to, you get the impression, A, if you weren't there, they wouldn't bother, B, that you're just a pain by being there, and C, they really don't want to give you anything. Motherwell, I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast, Motherwell was always a delight to deal with Alan Burrows. Alan Burrows went out his way to ensure that the media guys were looked after, and you know, that you had access to players, to the manager, and that, you know, questions could be asked that they quite often couldn't be asked at other clubs. Now, the key thing is, that's not a case of me saying that's great, he's looked after us. The reality is, the media is only a conduit between, you know, the club, them, and guys like yourself that can't be at the press conferences or want to know what's going on at the club. We know that world is changing with things like this podcast and all the rest of it. By and large, the great strength of modern journalism has been that, you know, guys like me have had kind of access to the contacts in the clubs that fans have not had. So you're the conduit, and guys like Alan Burrows always made that a much easier task than it was at many other clubs. That said, that world is changing as well.
We'll stick with Alan Burrows, and you were talking about the television. He's been a very big critic of the BBC's coverage, and in particular Sports Scene, which we've moaned like hell about it as well, yeah. To be fair. There's been games where we've only been on for a minute and a half of an hour programme. That's very, very poor. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say to you, and it's, I suppose it is to some extent a case of defending kind of colleagues that I worked with for years and years and years, the lack of resources that BBC Scotland are working with by comparison to BBC Network, if you want, BBC Britain, as you might call it, you know, the lack of resources are frightening. So, you know, you've got really limited numbers of people working on programmes like that. You've got people right up against it, you know, editing, not just editing, actually trying to get editing suites, actually get access to editing suites. I think there's a notion out there that, you know, that places like the BBC, there's this kind of luxury of being overstaffed and you know, people wandering into, you know, with their cappuccino into an editing suite, sitting there at their leisure. It doesn't work like that, I can assure you, you know. You're nipping in, the Sunday's nipping out, or you're fighting for a bit of time, and you've not got enough bodies to sit and edit and to craft pieces the way you'd like. There's a lot of really talented people in the BBC that I worked with. They would love to have more resources, they would love to have more time editing suites and all the rest of it. They'd love to have more cameras covering games, they'd love to have their own platform probably, so they could do a longer programme. There's all of those things. But, you know, it's an entirely fair point to make. If you're a Motherwell fan, if you're a United fan, if, you know, if your highlights appear for 45 seconds or 60 seconds, you're going to be raging, you know. And one of the things that has always bugged me, and it bugged me in the Beeb as well, is undoubtedly, as a public service broadcaster, when I was with the BBC, we did not necessarily have to chase ratings. We shouldn't have had to be chasing ratings. And therefore, Celtic and Rangers, bluntly, should have been taking their place in the queue alongside everybody else. There's no good reason why either the two of them should have been more of a draw than anyone else, because the BBC is a public service broadcaster. You can understand independents saying, if we put Rangers on, if we put Celtic on, they'll attract 500,000 viewers each, so we'll put Motherwell or Dundee United to the bottom of the queue. Public service broadcasters should not have to do that. And you know what, I actually think there's probably a great many Celtic and Rangers fans would not disagree with that view either. You know, most football fans, when you kind of push them and not necessarily into a corner, are actually pretty fair-minded about things when they talk logically about the game, you know. So there is no good reason that we should simply make sure that the really big clubs, if you want to put it like that, are somehow or other fettered upon.
Do you think by that token we're not ever going to see a Saturday night Scottish football highlights programme, because basically the resources aren't there and there's not enough demand for it? Or do you think that perhaps changing the day up and making people look forward to a Saturday night, not necessarily at the same time as Match of the Day down south, but put it on at a time where people, it's still fresh in their memory by the Sunday.
Yeah.
People have went online and seen them.
I kind of think that'll take one of two things. It'll either probably take political independence or further devolution of broadcasting to Scotland, neither of which is guaranteed. I know there's lots of arguments going on at the moment about devolving, and if you do devolve further powers to the BBC in Scotland, that might well free up resources and money so that, you know, we could actually put together the kind of product that the guys and the girls who are associated with the programme would want to put out. I mean, you know, lots of them wouldn't necessarily be happy with their working conditions and what they're having to cope with, because you want to put out the best product that you want. I mean, there's a great deal of pride in saying to somebody, you work on Sports Sound or you work on Sports Scene, you know, but you want to put out the best product possible. So I think it would probably take further devolution of broadcasting powers to Scotland. One of the things that probably aggrieves a lot of folk in the broadcasting game is that you've got BBC Alba, and this is not having a pop at Alba, but you turn on BBC Alba and they've got their own platform, and that's great. A lot of people will wonder why BBC Scotland can't have its own platform, so that we actually have room to do Scottish programming, Scottish sports programmes, and all the rest of it, rather than having to try to fit a wee feature about an up-and-coming track cyclist or a nice feature on a football player into a 1.5 minute slot in Reporting Scotland. I mean, when I worked not that many years ago on Sports Scene, we used to do the Saturday afternoon Sports Scene. Some of you may remember I was bizarrely the email kid in my 40s with Rob McLean. And we used to be able to go out and do features. You'd go away and do features on players, you'd go away to wherever, Inverness or Aberdeen, and actually do decent features on players. And that world doesn't exist anymore. That's just not there for us to do. And that's a great pity, because you can really do a lot of great stuff if you've got the platform to do it on. So it would take either independence or devolved broadcasting. But to strike a slightly political note, if we are going to devolve broadcasting, we kind of just devolve it from London to Glasgow. It might not be a bad idea, actually, if there was maybe a wee film unit out in Motherwell or a current affairs unit up in Dundee or something like that, kind of just be devolved to Glasgow, because otherwise we'll see nothing but Celtic and Rangers.
Yep, good point.
Guys, what we'll do is we'll need to actually talk about Motherwell again, just briefly, I promise, Jim. And we'll look ahead to Saturday's game against St Johnstone at McDermott Park. Jay, Tuesday night was a massive one for Mark McGee, and especially at a time where the fans really seemed to be turning against the manager. I wrote a wee piece on Monday night just stressing the need to stick by the manager and stick by the players, given there wasn't a big gap between ourselves in 11th place at that time and Ross County in 4th. That win on Tuesday against United has made that gap even less. I think people are suddenly a bit more positive about the players, and particularly about the manager, who, as we've said before, he's here for the long term, whether people like him or not.
It remains to be seen, I think, just how that result on Tuesday will have played with a lot of the fans. As I've said before, I'll put my hands up and say I'm one of the fans who happened to not like the game because of his previous spell and because of certain things he says in interviews and press conferences. But I can still recognise when he does a good job. I can still recognise when he gets things right, and I will still happily have that manager for years to come if it means that we're a successful football team. Whether Tuesday, a 3-0 win, as I said earlier. You know, and I don't want to, you know, upset Jim again. But
I'm through the pain barrier, honest.
I can hear that kitchen drawer opening again. Jesus.
It wasn't against, you know, a fantastic side, so we can't get too carried away. I think that the abuse and the vitriol that we've heard from the East Stand towards Mark McGee, I don't think it's going to be, you know, cured by a 3-0 victory at Tannadice on Tuesday. I think that it's something that will be work in progress, if you like. I think he's, you know, and that's natural. You know, he did rub people up the wrong way the last time. You know, you don't need to like the guy to understand or dislike the guy to understand that if you have that kind of personality that, as Jim said earlier, is divisive, then if things don't go well for you, you're going to have less time with a lot of people. That's just what happens. It's not just in football. It could be in any walk of life. If you have a job where you're disliked and you're struggling at the moment, at the time, then other people are going to be reluctant to give you support and to help you. And that's the same in football management. There are people who don't like them because of a few reasons. And so if things aren't going well in the park, there is going to be that kind of turn on the manager. And I think that what we've heard over the last few weeks has been fully unnecessary. As much as I don't like McGee, I think that it's completely counterproductive what we've heard for the stands at Fir Park. It's an absolute nonsense, some of the shouts you hear. It's embarrassing at times. And I think it's been to such a degree that, firstly, I've been surprised by how quickly and how audible it's been. Secondly, I don't think Tuesday's win is going to, you know, quash that by any great measure. I think that we need to build on Tuesday. We need to start getting points, winning games and putting in good performances. And only then do I think that kind of negativity will subside. Because, to be honest, having read your blog on during the week there, Sparrow, I think the one thing that stuck out for me was when you described Fir Park as just not a nice place to be going to at the moment. And that's completely right. You're going to games, the atmosphere from the last couple of years is gone, and it's been replaced by, you know, booing when a pass goes astray, abuse at the players and the manager. And we're kind of back to where we were a good few years ago when, you know, there were players scapegoated and there were shouts and it was just a generally negative and horrible place to be. And I don't think Tuesday is going to have, you know, got rid of that quite yet. But what it does do is it gives you optimism, it gets us out of the rut we were on. And, you know, there's no reason. St Johnson aren't any better than we are in terms of personnel. So if we can go on Saturday and have a bit more confidence about us and get the result, then hopefully we can start building the results that A, gets up the table, and B, kind of get rid of this negativity amongst the support.
Buster, we've almost harped on about, the next couple of fixtures all look very winnable, that we need to take points from this, and that remains going into Saturday. Get a positive result at Perth, you then look at Partick Thistle at Fir Park the following week. I think there's actually a wee bit of an advantage playing away from home just now, where I think the fans were right behind the team from the get-go on Tuesday night. That made a nice change. It was nice to be part of. As Jay pointed out, I've already said that attending Fir Park hasn't been enjoyable in recent weeks. A few good results on the road might bring a bit of positivity back to Fir Park as well.
Possibly, but, you know, we had that period where we went 5-6 games unbeaten, and as soon as we lost, or, you know, didn't they win in 2 or 3, there was people just as if they were just waiting on it to happen. You know, I know that, you know, everybody who goes to Fir Park obviously has Murdoch's best interests at heart, but, you know, I just get the feeling that it was something that people were waiting on. I don't want to say hoping for, because I don't really think anybody was hoping for, you know, the team not to be doing well, but there's people just waiting on an excuse to open their club, basically, you know, scream the abuse they can at McGee. But as you says, it's been like our motto, basically, this last few months. The next few games look pretty winnable. So as you says, if we can put together a wee bit of a run, I don't see us being anywhere near, you know, the bottom two, basically. As I said before, 10th is probably, you know, I'd be happy with 10th this season, to, you know, because of where we started, you know, the sort of run we've been on recently, dropped in there again, got out of there again. But as I said, the league's so tight, you know, we could probably go 4th in 2 weeks and then end up 11th in 3 weeks. So, you know, who knows what will happen.
This is quite fascinating listening to you guys. I mean, you know, I mean, I deal or dealt with Motherwell kind of maybe half a dozen, maybe eight games a season or something like that, you know, and Firth Park has always struck me as one of the great, there's usually a great atmosphere at the place, and from what you're saying there, kind of almost sounds, if not to use too strong an adjective, it almost sounds as though the atmosphere in recent times has been almost poisonous. And I can recall, I covered quite a lot of Mark McGee's games at Aberdeen, and sometimes it got really, really fractious up there. You know, I'm not entirely sure that the Dons fans, although he was a legend as a player, had ever taken to his opening remarks when he said he would really want to get the Celtic job, you know. And of course, you know, given you know the way he left you guys. But to some extent, it's like intruding on private grief, but it's also the story of every club. I mean, Jackie McNamara went from hero to zero in a very short space of time at Tannadice, and the atmosphere around the terraces at Tannadice became really, really painful as well. One of the things, I mean, early on in the podcast, you asked me about the difference at the moment and kind of, you know, going from being a journalist covering the game on a Saturday to actually getting to go and watch it with a different eye almost as a fan. One of the things that is difficult is trying to get the objectivity out of your system. A few weeks back, I went to Partick Thistle game with a mate of mine. He'd hospitality organised, and it was good. Anything where there's free drink involved is good. So I went along and sat there, and it was fascinating watching some of my mates and people in the stand shouting and screaming at guys, you know, get it down, control it, shoot. And sometimes you're thinking, but the ball's 4 yards from the guy, you know, he's got his back to goal. He would need to be, you know, Messi, you know, times three to be able to do what you're asking him to do. So I think sometimes, you know, when you actually put yourself back in the position of a fan, it's all about winning, tribalism and all the rest of it. And I think that's the biggest difference that I've found. I've probably become, over a great many years, much more objective about things than I was just as a paying customer, you know.
Just a quick one on St Johnstone, Jim. Tommy Wright, a manager that perhaps is, I don't want to, for want of a better expression, overstayed his welcome. He had a fantastic first couple of seasons where St Johnstone have been in the upper reaches of the league table. They've won the Scottish Cup. Now maybe slightly on the downward spiral, Michael O'Halloran left for a championship club, which was a very controversial decision. And they seem to be direct effect on the results, made a very poor start to 2016.
Yeah, they've, I mean, I think, you know, they've lost to Dundee, they've lost to Aberdeen, they lost in the League Cup to Hibs as well. They're on a really bad run at the minute. And this is quite fascinating because, you know, when Dundee United were kind of looking at Michael Patalainen, they were also looking at John Hughes, they were also looking at Tommy Wright. Tommy Wright, I think, was interested in the job, but also conscious of the size of the job he might be taking on. not speaking to United did for him was it gave him an extra 18 months of a deal, probably gave him a big uplift, as they say, in wages. And all of a sudden, it's kind of gone really, really pear-shaped. Now, he's made some signings. He's brought wee Danny Swanson in there, who's a player I admire, but he's lost Michael O'Halloran. I know O'Halloran hadn't scored for a few games, but he's a really important player to have there. And, you know, all of a sudden, it's the same kind of thing. I was actually really surprised when St Johnstone, I was working as a TV reporter the day St Johnstone beat Dundee United in the Cup Final, and my gig the next day was to be on the St Johnstone team bus through Perth, and a couple of things surprised me. One, fantastic turnout, you know, and you are kind of tempted to think, you know, where do a hell of a lot of you people go on a Saturday, because the crowds didn't go up by much when, you know, when the season started. But the other thing that kind of really struck me with Saints is, how long can you kind of keep this going? You know, because they have done really well in recent times. I've had some great trips to Europe with them and all the rest of it, to Rosenborg, Luzern, places like that. You wonder how long you can keep it going. But just after they won the Cup, I was still amazed at the stick that not so much Tommy Wright was getting with the chairman, Stevie Brown, because the Browns, by and large, I think, are acknowledged as having done a really, really good job in keeping a club who's got a home court support of about 3,000. And I don't buy that. I don't buy this stuff about Perth not being a football town. Perth's got a population of 42,000 people. I mean, if 3,000 or 4,000 people are turning out to watch Saints, pro rata, they're no any worse off than Motherwell or Dundee United or Hibs or Hearts, you know. But it's a very tall order to keep that going all the time. And all of a sudden, you know, you tend to think it's St Johnstone. I wrote something recently saying you never contemplate them being a side that are other than a top league team, and suddenly you look at them and you know, you guys are 3 points off the pace, albeit a couple of more games played than them. But, you know, their fall has been pretty dramatic. And if they don't watch, they're going to kind of drop into that bottom six for good. They're in the bottom six at the moment on goal difference from Inverness, but they're going to drop into that on good. And that's when fans start to turn as well. And I think it's probably fair to say that the relationship between Steve Brown, the chairman, and Tommy Wright as a manager, it's a bit like an old married couple. I think the two of them are kind of bicker away all the time. They manage to do what's best for Saints all the time, but I think Tommy always feels as a manager, and most of them do, that he needs a few more bob to spend. He needs the purse strings opened a wee bit more to continue to compete and attract players to St Johnstone. Whereas Stevie probably feels, you know what, we cannot afford to get into trouble. When his old man took the club over, God, 30-odd years ago, they were almost out of existence. You know, so there's that constant tension. You've had it yourself at your own place. Dundee United are going to have it next season when, you know, in all probability they will be in the Championship. There's a constant tension at football clubs with fans and managers. It's probably the reason they get so well paid.
Just on O'Halloran, and I'm leaving for Rangers. Do you think that would maybe been a bone of contention for Tommy Wright? I heard Stuart Cosgrove talking and off the ball following our game at Dundee a few weeks ago, where he was saying there was no chance that O'Halloran was ever going to go. 2 days later, he signed for Rangers.
That shows why you should never listen to Cosy as a pundit. look, the simple truth of the matter, I mean, I know this, having watched a succession of Dundee United players leaving over the years, either for Celtic or you know, guys like Johnny Russell going south of the border, Goodwillie, and people will say, you know, why are they going? They should stay and learn. They're too. You can hardly say that about Haaland, who's 25, I think. But, you know, the reason that they go to the likes of Rangers and Celtic or down south is because they quadruple their wages. You know, they go from 1,200 quid a week at St Johnstone to 6, 7, 8 grand a week, you know, at Dundee United. They go, you know, they go away down south for four times the money they're on. The O'Halloran one, I always thought O'Halloran would go. In fact, I write a column for the Dundee Courier up here, and I'd say it a few weeks back, if O'Halloran goes, if Rangers come in for him, St Johnstone need to open the wallet, and they need to make sure that Tommy Wright is compensated for the loss of a very good player. O'Halloran was either going to go to Rangers or elsewhere, and he's gone. And he's a big, big loss because he was turning into a really, really good player. Not only a goal scorer, but an absolute flying machine as well. And the type of player that when he's playing well, it's taking two and sometimes three players away with him, you know. So it's been a big, big loss. I thought it was always likely that St Johnstone would lose him. The big problem for them is, can they compensate for his loss? And I'm not sure they can.
Guys, we'll wrap things up as always with this week's Remember Well question. This is a part, Jim, where I just hand over the reins to Jay and then go and open a beer. It'll explain the kind of background behind the Remember Well project and give you this week's question, which hopefully is quite topical.
Okay. The background. I suppose if there's anybody listening who doesn't really know, it's been a while since we've mentioned the actual background behind it. It's Remember Well, it's basically just a charity that deals with people with dementia and Alzheimer's through reminiscence therapy, you know, using football memorabilia, that kind of thing. So every week we put a question out on social media and ask for people's Motherwell-related memories. So this week, I won't take credit for the question because it was actually Sparrow who put it online. But we were just looking for any stories or suggestions relating to the weird and wonderful measures that people have taken in order to source some football news or Motherwell results over the years. Callum Benson said, didn't exactly source it, but I did fly from the UK to Minneapolis on business in 2002, whereupon the first thing I saw in my hotel room was a message on the TV screen saying that Motherwell had gone into administration. My wife had phoned ahead and left a message for the Terry McDermott says, can remember returning from Falklands via West Coast of South America in 1986. We called into Lima, Peru, and I was listening to live commentary on BBC World Service at breakfast time. Believe me, it is a very long Saturday when you've already lost at 7:30 a.m. Ian Buchanan said, on holiday in America, my parents' house, to listen to Clyde's Super Scoreboard cover the Motherwell Fall Cup relegation battle, which Dougie Arnott managed a double to keep us either up or out of the playoff spot. Cost about £20, but worth it. Chris Jack said, going into Radio Shack in Florida in 2001 to use a store PC to check a pre-season result in Fir Park Corner. Dave Taylor, watching the Stirling away tie on the wee Bet365 virtual pitch was great fun. And Matt Miller said, in the late 90s, a laptop and dial-up 56k internet connection, Scottish footy coverage while living in Surrey, along with a few cans. So a few different responses there. I was disappointed with no shouts for the old Motherwell club call. But I don't know if you guys can think of any weird and wonderful measures you've resorted to in the past.
Not so much weird or wonderful, but when I was younger, my dad used to take me along. It got paid off, so we couldn't really afford it at one point, and I used to go along with my grannies, with all my cousins and stuff, and they would all be, you know, kicked out at the back to go and watch, to go and play, basically, with all my aunties and my mum chatted away in that. But I would always sit in the living room with my granny and my aunties, doing my own thing, but I would constantly have it on that. I think it was 3:10 for the SPL, or the, you know, Premier League, whatever it was called, for the results coming through on CFAX. And the pages would refresh every 4 or 5 minutes, and then, you know, I'd be sitting there amongst my aunties and stuff, and then I'd pipe up every so often with a, "Oh yes," or a, "You bastard," and I got a wee clip around the head. So, you know, that's what I used to do when I couldn't make it along.
I personally can't remember anything that bizarre. I can't remember in Florida, possibly late 90s, played Hearts in a midweek game, and my mum refused to let me phone home to find out what the score was, so I went into one of the Walmarts and found an Orlando News which had a British results section way at the back of the newspaper. But the thing was, because they only got these results a day after, I don't think I actually found out that we drew one each until the Friday when the game was on the Wednesday. At that time that was quite a good result though, so I was fairly happy at the end outcome.
Well, guys, as an interloper, my memory, abiding memory of Motherwell concerns 1991 and Stevie Kirk, and I'll say no more about it.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant. I think that's a good point to kind of call this a day. And Jim, I can only thank you for giving up your time. It's been absolutely fascinating for us. We really appreciate it.
Can I also just say, firstly, thanks to Jim, and I can also apologise because Dundee United versus Motherwell last season, I met you in Frew's Bar and I had so much to drink, the only broadcast name I could think of was Hugh Keevans.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to apologise for such an insult.
Not at all. There was two of you, that's right. You were heading for the train, as I recall.
Yeah, that's it. I think you
can put
out £5 on Twitter for anybody who could identify us.
Thanks very much, Jim, for coming on.
Right. No worries, boys. Thanks very much for that.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. I'm a desperate man. I'm a desperate man.